saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
You have been watching live coverage of President Donald Trump delivering the State of the Union address from the U.S. Capitol. Lasting a lengthy 1 hour, approximately 20 minutes, he's now concluded his speech, standing to raucous applause. President Trump striking a very confident, optimistic tone as he reflected on achievements of his administration. President Trump started off strong, saying America is respected in the world once again. He, of course, touted the economy, saying the average employment rate during his administration is lower than any other administration in U.S. history. He described the economy as roaring, saying that the U.S. stock market has soared and that the U.S. is seeing a blue-collar boom. Now, on China, President Trump said his strategy for China has worked, and he touted the Phase One trade agreement. There was also brief mention of the ongoing novel coronavirus outbreak, where President Trump said his administration is coordinating with Chinese government officials and working closely with them on controlling the outbreak. Notable topics he did not mention include the impeachment proceedings. There is President Trump making his way out of the room. For more analysis now, let's bring in our U.S. Bureau Chief, Simon Marks. Simon, you've been watching this along with millions of Americans. President Trump clearly in his element here tonight during his primetime speech. What did you hear, though, out of all of this? Did you just hear a campaign pitch?
Same thing. Well, there was definitely a campaign pitch there, Teresa, but just moments ago, literally a jaw-dropping moment as President Trump finished that speech and the applause began to ring out in the chamber of the House of Representatives. Behind him, Nancy Pelosi could be seen very demonstrably tearing her copy of his speech up. Two separate bundles of paper she took into her hands and tore them in half and cast them aside. The clearest indication that we have seen, and I think, frankly, a moment that Americans are going to be reacting to viscerally on both sides of the political divide here over the course of the next few hours. You'll remember that when Donald Trump walked into the chamber, there were absolutely no pleasantries whatsoever exchanged between him and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the woman, of course, who had led the impeachment inquiry and investigation against President Donald Trump. Indeed, he rebuffed a handshake from her that she seemed to proffer. So I think that this speech is going to end up being remembered for a couple of different things. First of all, this was Donald Trump absolutely laying out his stall for re-election in November of 2020. And if you want to know why Donald Trump feels so confident about the re-election battle that he's about to engage in, you just had to listen to the cadences that he struck in that speech, particularly one right at the beginning. Jobs are booming, incomes are soaring, poverty is plummeting, crime is falling, confidence is surging, and our country is thriving and highly respected again. I mean, that was the tone of the entire speech, whether he was talking about foreign policy, winning, as he put it, the trade war with China, whether he was talking about the battle against Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi of Islamic State and General Qasem Soleimani of Iran, whether he was talking about healthcare in this country, about the fight against illegal immigration that he's leading. Underpinning this speech was his contention that he and only he can keep America great again, having been the man who in 2016 told Americans that he was going to make America great again. The other remarkable aspect of this speech, and we've never seen anything like this in a State of the Union address, was the way in which he turned it into a reality TV show. I mean, all sorts of invited guests in the gallery are going home with something. The little girl who was suddenly given an educational scholarship. Rush Limbaugh, America's best-known conservative talk radio host, given the Medal of Freedom in the room by First Lady Melania Trump. Even an army wife there at the end of the speech, given her husband back. He'd just returned from Afghanistan and she didn't appear to be aware that her husband was in the chamber. So this sort of redefinition of the State of the Union address and this turning it, as only Donald Trump can, showman that he is, into essentially a reality TV show, I think is going to redefine the role that the State of the Union address can play in the life of any presidency. But ultimately, this speech is also going to be remembered for that final moment. Nancy Pelosi picking up the piece of paper and tearing it in half and casting it asunder with an absolute glower on her face. I'm not sure how that's going to play out with the American public. That, I think, may have been a high-stakes gamble by the Speaker of the House of Representatives. It's going to be very interesting to see public reaction to that.
Definitely many made-for-TV moments during this State of the Union address, Simon. Talk us through items that President Trump did not touch on, notably the impeachment. What do you think that says about his train of thought right now?
Yeah. I think it says that the people around him have taken him to one side, and those include, by the way, many Republican members of the Senate who were on television today saying, we do not want him to talk about impeachment. He knows he's going to get his chance to do that tomorrow. In a few hours' time, he'll be formally acquitted at the Senate trial. He has indicated that he will be making, we believe, some pretty extensive remarks about what he insists has been a hoax and a witch hunt against his presidency from the very moment that he was elected president. He'll be making those remarks then. They focused him tonight and they made him stick to that script. There were very few ad-libs. Those of us who were able to follow along the prepared remarks and check them against his delivery, he barely departed from the teleprompter. There were a couple of points, in fact, where he was even being a little bit tripped up by the teleprompter. But he was controlled tonight in a way that Donald Trump rarely is. And that allowed the speechwriters, and President Trump, I'm sure, played a role in scripting this speech, that allowed them very effectively, I think, to make claims about the promises that he says he has kept during the course of this presidency. The fact checkers, I have to tell you, will be working overtime tonight. There were all sorts of claims made in that speech that are simply not true. There was a breathtaking moment where he claimed that some Americans had seen increases of 100% and in some cases more than 100% in the value of their 401k retirement funds since he became president. Not only would I like to meet an American who has enjoyed that kind of benefit, I would like to meet his stockbroker as well, because I'm sure we could all be using a bit of retirement advice in that area. I mean, the fact checkers are going to be having a field day with this, but President Trump making that speech, being seen coast to coast on all the major broadcast networks in this country, knew that the fact checkers couldn't possibly keep up with him. And so this was a president making often absolutely spurious claims about his record, but absolutely insisting that he has made good on the promises that he made during the 2016 campaign, saying to Americans, the economy is safe in my hands, foreign policy is safe in my hands, Americans are physically safer in my hands as a result of winning the trade war with China. Those kinds of geopolitical economic ties are more beneficial to the United States than they were before. This was a president absolutely laying claim to a second term in the Oval Office. And you've got to wonder, have the Democrats got a candidate out there vying for their presidential nomination who can stand up to him and put on a performance like that in their own conventions and at the upcoming presidential debates? We are in for another truly roller coaster year in American politics here.
You know, Simon, journalists watch the State of the Union address very differently than the average member of the public. President Trump did stick to core bread and butter issues, the economy, job creation. But for the average American family, it's 10:30 p.m. in Washington, D.C. What are families saying about this State of the Union address? Do you think it appealed to them?
I'm going to guess, and I have to guess, Teresa, because I've been here waiting through the speech to offer up some thoughts after it. I'm going to guess that there will be a difference in the television audience patterns for this State of the Union address versus past speeches. In the past, year after year, we see an audience when the speech begins at 9 o'clock that gradually over the course of the 90 minutes or so drops off. I wonder if that is what happened here tonight, because the choreography of this speech, whatever you think of the politics, whatever you think of the spurious claims that President Trump was making, whatever you think of the inflated claims that he was using to advance his argument that he's made good on his pledges, the choreography of the speeches, the way in which he wove in all the guests up in the gallery, the mother of a child who had been born prematurely and who won from the president an increase in medical funding, leading her to whoop in the chamber with joy at an announcement that she didn't seem to be aware was coming. I mean, at times it felt like we were watching The Price is Right, one of those American game shows. You wondered if everybody in the crowd was going to be given a car when they left. I mean, it was an astonishing rhetorical device. And I suspect that kept people rooted to the spot and watching the program and watching the speech. And in that regard, it may help him enormously. Shortly before the speech began, a new poll came out showing his approval rating stands at 49%. That's the highest it's been in months. And that, of course, comes on the eve of his acquittal at the impeachment trial, his opportunity to put all the difficulties that have bedeviled and beleaguered him behind him as he heads out on the campaign trail and heads towards November. And so much as Democrats demonstrably wanted to show by sitting on their hands that they weren't in any sense backing him or supporting hardly any of the things that he had to say, I think with the rare sort of notable exception of Nancy Pelosi cheering when President Trump in another device suddenly unveiled the fact that the man who claims to be president of Venezuela, Juan Guaido, was in the audience for the speech. Another surprise. The Democrats, I think, are going to have to go away and really seriously ask themselves, how are they going to battle with a president who can use television, who can use rhetoric, and who is willing to use falsehoods as he advances his claim for a second term in office? How do you battle that? That's a huge question for Democrats here tonight.
All right, Simon, plenty to talk about coming out of the U.S. Please stay with us for just a while longer there. Well, we head to Iowa now, where partial results from the caucuses are out today following a delay. Former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is narrowly leading the field, with U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders trailing closely behind. They are followed by Elizabeth Warren in third and former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden in fourth. Back to Washington now, where Simon is standing by. So, Simon, Mr. Buttigieg, he was a relatively unknown nationally a year ago, but things have really changed. What do these results indicate?
Well, we haven't got 100% of the results in yet, so we don't really know if Pete Buttigieg or Bernie Sanders have actually won. But whatever the outcome, whether Pete Buttigieg has come out on top or whether Bernie Sanders ultimately wins the state, this is a remarkable result for a man who was nationally unknown just a year ago. It provides him with a fillip. It allows him to head to New Hampshire. In fact, he's already there because the primary will be taking place in that state next week, and really try to prove that his appeal goes beyond simply Iowa. Strong result for Senator Bernie Sanders as well. We still don't know which fork in the road the Democrats are going to take during this election year. Are they going to embrace a centrist candidate like Pete Buttigieg or former Vice President Joe Biden, who appears to have had an awful night in Iowa? Or are they going to veer to the left with either Senator Bernie Sanders or Senator Elizabeth Warren? Or might they plump for someone who at the moment we're not talking about very much, but who is spending millions and millions of dollars of his personal money on this campaign, the former mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, ready to compete in some of the states once we get past New Hampshire next week. That's a huge decision for Democrats to take, and they have to take it now, not just with the fiasco of what took place in Iowa, having made headlines for the past 24 hours, but also with the cadences of President Donald Trump's speech here in Washington ringing in their ears. I think it's going to be opportunity time for Mayor Pete Buttigieg going forward, and for some of these other candidates, recalibration time as they look at the events of the last 24 hours, both in Iowa and here in Washington, and ask themselves how they should react to them.
Well, as you mentioned, Simon, New Hampshire, that's the next stage of this nominating process. The uncertainty in the Iowa caucuses, does that raise the stakes in New Hampshire?
Well, New Hampshire has a different system. I mean, it's actually an amazingly basic system. You go into a voting booth and you vote for someone. It's not a caucus, and they are not using the app that infamously Democrats in Iowa chose to use, the app that apparently had some sort of behind-the-scenes coding abnormality that led to all of the problems that we witnessed 24 hours ago in Iowa. So New Hampshire will be feeling, I think, quietly confident that they can bring off a smooth running primary election. But the snafus that we witnessed in Iowa have worried some other states that were planning to use the same app or the same kind of app that was being used behind the scenes by Democrats in New Hampshire. And also, it's really raised the stakes for the Democrats more broadly. They desperately needed this week, with the first in the nation primary in Iowa, to project confidence, ability, serenity, and a readiness to run the country. And unfortunately for them, Iowa has suggested that far from being ready to run a government, they couldn't even successfully run a ballot in a sparsely populated agrarian state in the middle of the country. So they've got a lot of work now to do as they hurtle towards New Hampshire and then Super Tuesday beyond all of that.
All right, Simon, we're going to circle back to our top story right now, which is President Trump delivering his State of the Union address. And you pointed out the most jaw-dropping moment at the end when Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi picked up that speech and ripped it up. We have video now. We're playing this now for our viewers. Can you talk us through what you think this means?
This town for a very long time. I was thinking about it today. I mean, I think I've been doing the State of the Union address here on Channel News Asia for almost 20 years now. I have never seen a moment like that. I mean, it was, for me, utterly jaw-dropping. It is the kind of dramatic gesture that flies in the face of the traditional comity that we are used to seeing, decorum, beneath the dome of the United States Capitol. It underscores the fact that this is the most deeply polarized city that even by its polarized standards over the last few years it has ever been. But to see Nancy Pelosi, I don't think Donald Trump saw it. I mean, he had finished the speech. He was turning to accept the applause. And as he did that, she picked the speech up in two separate clumps of paper and literally tore it in two and flung it down on her desk with a look of absolute disdain. We've never seen behavior like that beneath the dome of the Capitol. And I think the Democrats are going to have to explain exactly why she felt the need to do that. I mean, it almost felt like she was crossing a Rubicon there, that there's no turning back from that particular moment. Now, we know that she and President Trump have a deeply dysfunctional relationship. They haven't spoken, we believe, since last October when they had an absolutely furious row. But, you know, the State of the Union address, there is a ceremony and a majesty to this event, because it's not just the president as the political leader of the country, even though that speech was 100% political. It's the president as the head of state coming and making that traditional speech where he assures Congress that the State of the Union is strong, or as President Trump put it tonight, stronger than ever, with a bit of Trumpian hyperbole. To see Nancy Pelosi engage in that kind of behaviour at the end of the speech, I think there'll be quite a lot of Democrats out there who will be feeling somewhat discomforted by that. One wonders if she planned it or if she just felt it. But either way, it's hard to see that as much of a victory on television for the Democrats tonight. But we'll have to see how it plays out in the next few hours.
All right. We'll have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much for this, Simon. That was Simon Marks with those updates live from the U.S. Capitol.